This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is somebody that I've known virtually for a couple of years now, but this is the first time we physically met. Carl Dixon, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for coming up to DNC from your Florida digs. Background, please, on Carl and what you do.
Sure. I run an internet publishing empire, or at least I like to think of it as an empire.
Looks like one to me.
Well, in the government contracting niche, it's actually a really large resource with a lot of outreach. We get about 1 million visitors a year to our website. We've got like 10,000 customers, and we, you know, the newsletter we publish goes out to 65,000 people, and our LinkedIn group has 12,000 people. Those are all just really big numbers, but what it really means is that we're easy to find, and we publish a lot of content so that people can check us out very easily.
And you've got a couple of sites, Capture Planning.
CaptureplanningCom is the one that started it all, and now we have LinkedIn, where we take all of the information we published and turn it into a tool. And we also have virtual VP services, where people can get to the people that produce our content and get their advice and consulting services.
Okay, cool. So, and the newsletter.
Newsletter goes out every single week, and every single issue has information that you can use. It's not just about us. It's not just about promotion. It's about helping people solve real problems.
If you have any questions on bids, RFPs, capture, it's a great resource. I read it every week. We're going to do, sooner or later, a session, you and I, on thought leadership. So today's show is going to cover a lot of what we're going to talk about, we are going to talk about in the session. But I want to start with a little story, and I'd like your feedback on it. A friend of mine, Bob Davis, and I recorded about three and a half hours worth of interview on, we did it on CD, on business development. And in the middle of it, he tells a really great story. He goes into a board meeting. He's never presented before the executive team before. They ask him to come in to give an update on a program that he's been following. They're preparing to bid. So he goes through this long, elaborate presentation, how good a technical fit they are. And, you know, 99% whatever, great fit. It's wrapping up, getting ready to walk out, and the CEO says, "Oh, one more question." And Bob says, "What?" And the guy says, are we going to win this?" Bob just deadpans, "No." The CEO is stunned. "Why?" And he says, "Because the agency doesn't know us." How often does this happen?
That's a classic problem, and it's a problem that, because of things like LinkedIn, is easier to solve today than it ever has been before, because you have new ways to reach out to customers and introduce yourself to them, but not simply say, "Hi, I'm here and these are the capabilities of my company," but instead demonstrate that you're insightful and can solve the kind of problems that they're facing, and talk about the problems more so than yourself. Your ability to do that directly with your future potential customers today is much stronger and easier, more available than it ever has been in the past.
Right. One of the reasons that we got to know each other is through various activities on LinkedIn, and we belong to each other's groups. I've been following the business development group for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years maybe?
About that, yeah.
Not long after you launched it, but not immediately after you launched it. And there's a couple other groups that I think are really good, but well-managed groups in the government market are few and far between. These are groups on LinkedIn, not the associations out there. I won't comment on those. some of those are really well-managed and some aren't. So what got you started on LinkedIn, and how does it tie into thought leadership as a form of marketing?
Because of the nature of my business being wrapped up in internet publishing, I've been an early technology adopter the whole time. But so I was on LinkedIn actually for a few years before I really figured out just what you do with it. It took a while, but finally some light bulbs went off, and I created the group and you know, found ways to promote it, but more importantly, found ways to use that to achieve certain goals. And when I was doing that, nobody was even using the term thought leadership, you know. But it all really comes down to being useful, helping people solve problems, helping people accomplish their goals. And along the way, if you can be insightful, that's just icing on the cake.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to revolve necessarily around you posting this stuff all the time. There's some good posts from a lot of people commenting on those posts, et cetera.
Especially if you're in a services business or any business that's based on relationship marketing, which in the government contracting community is pretty
everything.
Much all of them.
Yeah.
Then what you have on LinkedIn isn't just a chance to get the message out. It's not about telling people. It's about interacting with people. And so you want to open up conversations. And you can open up a conversation by saying, you know, this is what I've been thinking about. This is what I've observed. Or I stumbled across this way to solve a problem. Or you can start a conversation by saying, hey, I was just reading this article or this book, and I got a lot out of it. I think you could too. But the key is that it has to lead to discussion.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just saying, hi, here's an article, it goes nowhere and doesn't do any value to the people that you're trying to reach out to. Your whole goal in reaching out to them is to interact with them.
Okay. Now, I've been doing a lot of coaching on LinkedIn, a lot of speaking and a lot of coaching on LinkedIn now for about 4.5 years. And like you, I've been on LinkedIn 10 years now. The first 3 years, I had no clue. But LinkedIn during that time period really didn't have a great deal of traction in our market. Since about mid-2010, when the government started loosening up its social media guidelines for employees, I've seen an explosion of federal people joining LinkedIn. And, they may not be as active as some, but they're there and they're watching. I did an article recently for InfoWeek.gov, and I'd done an informal survey of people I know, feds I know on LinkedIn, from CIOs down to frontline managers. And they're there. And they all say, you know, we may be a little reticent to share, but we do read. So your ability to leverage that is what?
If you're a government program manager and you want to procure something to achieve your goals, you're probably not going to jump. Well, you have a problem. Your problem is you have to write a statement of work. And that can be a big problem, especially when it's outside of your area of expertise and it's a big and complex statement of work. You're not simply going to go to vendors and say, hey, you know, how do I do this? Because that opens up a big can of worms, right? But if you can find a place where vendors are talking about the technical issues related to what it is you're trying to buy, then if you can just go there and observe the discussion, you can learn a lot about what you should incorporate into your statement of work just by simply watching these online discussions. And there's a lot of government staff doing that.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More with Carl after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. You can find Carl on LinkedIn, or you can find him at CapturePlanning.com, or what's the other?
Prop Library.
Prop Library, yep. Yeah. And let me suggest that you go to one or the other and sign up for Carl's newsletter. It really is an excellent resource, and it'll aim you at other excellent resources. All right, so a lot of people on LinkedIn claim to be subject matter experts or thought leaders, but their profiles don't tell me very much, and their activity level seems to be minimal. So raising the flag is and saying, oh, I'm here and I know all this stuff. What's it take to really constitute a thought leadership position?
You need to really be insightful to be valuable. Being a thought leader isn't about what you do. It's about what other people find value in. It's about the people you're trying to reach out to. So, you know, if what you say has value to them, okay, then they want to hear more. If what you say is just all about you and is just promotional and doesn't contain any insight, then nobody wants to listen to that, you know. So the way you get there are actually some you know, specific things you can keep in mind that can help you. First is by targeting solutions to problems, right? People want solutions to problems. And if you're providing real solutions that they can't get anywhere else, okay, or thoughts or approaches, that has value to them. Another one is knowledge of changes and what to do about them. You know, there's changes in our industry always. But just simply reporting the changes, that's news. And while there's a place for news, what people really hunger for is what to do about the changes. So the difference between news and thought leadership is you know, telling people, you know, here's how this is going to impact you and what you can do about that. Another thing to keep in mind is that the people you're reaching out to, what are their goals? How is what you're saying helping them to achieve their goals? And like I mentioned earlier, if we're really trying to achieve interaction with people, with our potential customers, then we want to say things that are going to inspire them to ask follow-up questions. So if I'm talking about changes and what to do about them, and somebody hears that and is thinking about how do I apply that in my environment, then you know, they're likely to come back with questions about that application. And that's exactly what you want. You want them interacting with you, not simply listening to you and no discussion going on about what you're saying.
Okay. The changes aspect, this it doesn't look like it from the outside except during maybe a shutdown or whatever, sequestration. But there are changes here. Is it the role of a thought leader to predict the changes or to explain them as they go along, or maybe a little bit of both? I mean, we can't anticipate all the changes coming down the pike.
The answer is yes. From your audience's perspective. Your audience wants to know, oh, here's something new that I never heard about before that could impact me. So finding out about what the trends are, where things are going, that has some value. But immediately after they hear about it, their next question is, what do I do about it?
Okay. And that, you know, that kind of ties into fads versus trends. LPTA is extremely hot right now. I don't think it's a trend myself. I've seen it before in this market in the 90s, and it went away because the low price led to low quality. So the technically acceptable side may be a new part of the equation here, but I still don't think it's been adequately addressed. But how do you tell when something, I mean, this is a fad we have to react to, number one. It's here. It's a fact today. Will it stick? You know, I don't think so, but I've been wrong before. But what's the difference here?
You just demonstrated thought leadership in that you said, hey, there's this new thing, LPTA, and it's a pendulum swing. Okay, I'm using the word pendulum, but still, you know, you're saying to people, you know, it's not really new. We've seen it before, and it has structural problems that are, you know, the last time this came around, for example, you know, it led to the invention of past performance, you know, a whole nother trend. So, you're alerting people that it's temporary. Now, temporary in our business may last years, but still,
long-term injury.
You know, but it has, but it's setting people up for what to do about it. And what to do about it is to anticipate the pendulum swing.
Okay. I want to touch on one thing, the visibility factor. We've seen a lot of people. There's, when you go to LinkedIn in the groups, there's the top influencers of the week in this group, and that's not an accurate portrayal necessarily of the people in that box.
Not even a little bit.
They may be the top posters. But this gets into my next area. What constitutes content, and how should a thought leader leverage that?
The way I approach it, because I do post a lot of the articles that I've published on LinkedIn, dozens of them every week, and what I'm looking for is comments. Not even that silly little like feature, although I take that as a little bit of input, that's giving me a little bit of feedback.
It's a Facebook feature.
But what I'm looking for is, did my content motivate people to express themselves, to say something, to reach out back to me and interact? Otherwise, I'm just shouting into the void.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hopeful that sooner or later in the group discussion areas that audio is employed somehow, so your discussion can be Carl saying a couple of things, because when you say it, I think more people may pay attention, because a lot of people just don't think they have the time to read, or simply don't take the time to read. But let's talk about content. I know that there are people out there that really only post their own. I like to peruse certain publications, and I've got a number of Google alerts to give me feeds on a variety of topics. And I believe that a strong ratio of three or four other people's pieces of information to one or two of my own is where I want to be. But it still has to bring value. Everything I post has to bring value to whatever group I'm posting it in. How do you deal with this? Because I know that you have more of a content marketing plan.
I'm at the opposite extreme from you. I hardly ever post things from other people, mainly because I publish so much. And so if I hit your ratio, then I'd be posting like hundreds of things every week, and everybody would be totally sick of me. But it's interesting that there's room for both approaches, because they're both conversation starters. I think the key is, And you really see it in the way you post and in the way in the groups that aren't well run, the way a lot of those posts show up. Your posts are always conversation starters. Here's something that's of interest and useful, and it's the start of a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of the noise that you see on a site like LinkedIn is people, getting out there and saying, here's an article, and that's it. It's a dead end. There's no invitation to come back and talk about it, or it doesn't lead to anything.
Okay, so if you post an article, when you post it, you have the ability to obviously link. You have to put in a title for your post. So do you think it's incumbent for people to put a sentence or two about what they found interesting, controversial, etc., to start the discussion?
I think that's critically important, because what you're trying to do is start a discussion. And if you think about how you do that face-to-face with people, okay, then that's how you need to introduce the article that you're posting. You need to provide that introduction, that conversation starter.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We will be back with Carl after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Again, Carl and I met through LinkedIn, and we've been corresponding regularly for the last 6 months or so. Anyway, we're planning on doing some speaking together and a variety of things. The ability to take LinkedIn to the next level is really, really key. But I don't want to abandon our last discussion on the content side. You and I agree, when I'm teaching people even about building their profile on LinkedIn, I make them define their goals. How important is this, not simply in building your profile, but in starting to share?
That's an area that where you'll hear the buzzword content marketing. Okay, content marketing from time to time is a really hot subject, and you'll hear things like
a lot of bush on it lately.
Yeah, you should do content marketing, but separate from the whole, well, what is it and what does that mean? You want to do it with a purpose. I mean, when you approach a site like LinkedIn and you're saying, okay, I want to start using LinkedIn to I guess promote myself, it sounds like a really positive thing, and then just start posting. That's where a lot of people sort of fall back on what comes easy, which is talking about themselves. The better approach is to think about what your goals are. Every single post should have a goal. So maybe it's to get contacts. Maybe it's just simply to build awareness. Okay, or it could be branding, could be to get people to take action, to do something, or to teach something. It could be to get orders if you're in sales.
Well, let me throw out something at you here. The subcontract is hot. It's always been hot. It's first GWAC ever awarded, going back to 92 or 93. But only 40 companies maybe are going to win a piece of this action. How can you leverage social media content marketing to position yourself to get on the radar of the people involved in that soup decision-making process?
I'm a real big fan of providing resources that help your customers do business with you. So instead of just having a content marketing strategy that amounts to let's post some stuff on our website, I like setting up places where customers can go to learn about things that they might find useful when they're writing the statement of work, where things that will help them make decisions as they figure out what their acquisition strategies are. So providing a very customer-focused set of content that the customer finds useful, not just simply getting on, you know, taking your capabilities package and putting it on your website. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not really useful content to the customer.
Posting 10 key employee resumes.
Right. But you can help your customers. And when you create a content library like that, that becomes an asset. And so if you are teaming, trying to figure out what team you're going to get on for Soup or building your team, companies that have assets like that are more valuable than the ones who don't. And the ones who have assets like that are far more likely to get task orders after you get on the thing because it's an IDIQ. You know, it's very easy to get on there and not get any business out of it unless you've got a channel to your customers and a way to interact with them. And that gets us back to what are the goals of your content marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. You can actually develop content that's part of your outreach to your customers and how you interact with them.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I think has been really cool about Soup, and they're not going to have a conference this coming year because of all of the snafus around it. But I was fortunate enough to keynote at a Soup conference a couple years ago, and it was literally like old home week. Buyers from across the agencies were there. All 30-some-odd vendors were there. The key staffers from the main Soup office were there. You know, everybody went out to dinner. Everybody had somebody to pal around with. I was the odd man out, and they brought me in. And it was really cool. But the other facet about this contract is the Soup team works hard to make it easy for the vendors to sell and the buyers to buy. They are working hard to make the vendors succeed. And I don't see that often. You wrote something recently about what it would take to get on Soup, didn't you?
Not Soup specifically.
Okay.
You mentioned, they're not doing the conference this year.
Yeah.
You know. And that basically opens up an opportunity for contractors. If you say, if you ask yourself, why would government staff go to a Soup conference in the first place? You know, what is it they're trying to get out of that conference? What information, what contacts, what are they looking for? You know, how do they derive value from the conference? And then give that to them through your LinkedIn posts, through the content library on your website.
Through the content library on your website.
Absolutely.
Do you have one or two membership websites?
The membership website is Prop Library.
Okay.
And that targets contractors, business development, and capture, and proposals. But it's set up with different content libraries to tackle different aspects of what you need to know as you go through the steps and the phases in business development.
Okay. And that's what, I'm not a BD guy. That's one of the reasons I like reading your content, because I'm always picking up something new. One of the vendors out there, you may probably be familiar with them, a company called Carahsoft, is now 10 years old, over $1 billion, all organic growth. They hit $1 billion at the end of year 7, so I have no clue where they are right now. But one of the cool things about watching them, and I've been watching them since the outset because the guy who founded it is a friend of mine, is that content library aspect. They've got an archive of over 1,000 webinars on every technology that they sell. And when they got stuff that I've never heard of. Gee, what a surprise. But 10, 15 webinars on this little niche technology. It's just massive. And it's definitely been part of their go-to-market strategies to educate people along the way.
I think that you could emulate that without having to take years to develop thousands of webinars if you just target the key decisions and the key issues that your customers face. Mm-hmm. So if you're a technologies company and your customers are having to decide, should I go with this platform or that platform, you can help them make that decision if that's key aspect of what you offer. You know, so I would look at it from two different perspectives. One is the acquisition process. You know, what decisions does the customer have to make along the way from I want to buy something to this is how I'm going to buy it, and also from the offering perspective of you know what. You know, how should I approach writing the statement of work and all of the trade-offs that go into that?
Okay. Now, give me a quick thumbnail on the types of content, though, that we're talking about here. We're talking about white papers, webinars, podcasts, what?
Even short little articles, if it focuses on a key decision that has to be made, mm-hmm. So long as it is easily accessible and has value to the reader. The reason why I think of it as a content library is because if you do short pieces and it's valuable, they'll come back for more. You know, they'll keep coming back in order whenever they have an issue, they'll think of your content library as a resource, and that can be their go-to place for solving problems. And that's really where you want to be in the customer relationship.
To be the place where they go to get the information. Bingo. You are listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back with Carl after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. You can find Carl at CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. How has social media changed relationship marketing? Let me preface this a little bit. We're in a situation now, and hopefully this is a fad, not a trend, too, where the ability of government employees, key decision makers, to get out to events has been radically restricted, you know, almost to the point of paralysis. So given that kind of environment, number one, is social media more important? How, even without that, how has it changed relationship marketing?
You have an opportunity to get in front of your customer virtually. And like any opportunity, when you're in front of the customer, you don't want to squander that opportunity. So you want to get in front of them in a way that delivers value so that they'll have follow-ups with you, but not follow-up meetings in the physical world, follow-up discussions online.
Or even on the phone.
You can make the transition very easily once you've started virtually, because it's really, you know, once the customer sees you as providing useful information, insightful information, things that they can depend on, you very quickly move from just being a resource into being a trusted resource. And you know, that is an extremely valuable thing.
Okay. So key here, step one would be visibility.
You got to be where your customers are, and more than ever, customers are on LinkedIn these days.
Mm-hmm. But as we've seen and discussed before, the visibility factor isn't always positive.
It opens the door, and you know, first impressions count. Are you delivering value, or you know, are you just part of the noise?
Okay. So if you deliver value, you're starting to build that credibility factor. And the being credible in this market leads to other opportunities. When the shutdown was getting ready to happen, and immediately after it happened, I got calls. You know, first time I ever got a call from the Wall Street Journal. Boom. But you know, Bloomberg, Baltimore Sun, three or four other publications, smaller, more targeted. But the visibility, credibility leads to a lot of other potential exposure.
People who might not even have known you or heard about you started looking into a problem area, saw, hey, here's this guy and what he's posting makes sense and is insightful and useful. So if I'm going to reach out to anybody, who's it going to be? That's where you want to be in your customer relationships.
Yeah. And So the visibility, the visibility and credibility add up to that ultimate trust factor. So, but you know, all this being said, what are the tangible benefits to thought leadership?
I think it really revolves around the whole trust issue. I mean, everybody says things like customers buy from people that they know and trust.
Trusted advisor.
Right, but they don't say how you actually achieve that, like especially if you're not the incumbent and the customer's never heard of you. How do you get into that position? And you know, the things that we're talking about with social media and developing a thought leadership position enable you to you know, demonstrate your credibility so that the customer will trust that you can actually deliver value and you know, provide good advice. And, you know, that's the hurdle that you need to get past before they're going to be willing to do business with you.
Okay. Now, this leads to a couple of scenarios. Let me start with, you know, that trusted advisor thing. About 4 or 5 years ago, it got to be so mundane. Everybody was saying, we're the trusted advisor for government. You know, no, you're not.
One more unsubstantiated claim to delete out of your proposals. It's not about you anyway. You don't obtain trusted advisor status by claiming it. You get that status by demonstrating it. And what LinkedIn does is it gives you a chance to demonstrate what you can do and what you think and what, the quality of your advice.
Okay. You've been a past president of APMP in DC. Mm-hmm. Yep. You've been an active member for really long time. You've advised hundreds of companies on this process. Over the last couple of years, how many companies, what percentage of the companies that you've been working with are actually leveraging these platforms, especially LinkedIn, to their ultimate benefit? Let me preface this with one story that we had before we went on air. You and I both have experienced people coming up to us at various events and assuming that we've met because they've seen us so often on LinkedIn.
I don't know the actual percentages. I can just say what my gut tells me. And my gut tells me that probably 30%, with a trend towards half of the companies out there are attempting to do something with sites like LinkedIn and factor it into their marketing. Most of them are doing a really bad job of it. You know, posting your capabilities package on LinkedIn does not mean that you have made LinkedIn part of your marketing strategy. And really ultimately, LinkedIn is really just another channel for the marketing that you should be doing. It's not a replacement. It's not.
It's a cool marketing tool.
Yeah, but it doesn't do the marketing for you. Mm-hmm. You have to have the marketing strategies, and you have to be well thought through. And if you are, then LinkedIn gives you the reach to actually accomplish some things. But if you just get on there and post about your company, if you post things like we're the trusted advisors and the providers of such and such, That's just noise. Nobody's, you know, that will do more to hurt your credibility than it will to boost it.
Right. So you look at it as like a publication with no articles and a huge audience.
Or one that's just full of ads, you know?
Yeah. And I see that. I've advised a number of companies, as I said before, but, you know, sometimes when we're having our initial strategy meeting to figure out what the goals are, they're constantly thinking, push. We want to push this product. We want to push this, you know, we're definitely going to use this for sales. What do you think?
I think if you are telling people, you're probably doing it wrong. If you are putting out, if you are saying what you want to say, probably doing it wrong. But if you're thinking about what your customers need to hear in order to make decisions and do business with you, and then you're providing information that's useful, now you're on the right track.
Cool. Final thoughts.
Factoring the customer's perspective into your marketing is really what we're talking about here. It's what's at the heart of thought leadership. It's what's at the heart of social media. It's really what's at the heart of classical strategic marketing. But if you look around the Beltway, there are very few companies that can actually incorporate the customer's perspective into what they do. So if you're one of them, you've got a tremendous competitive advantage.
Bingo. Carl, thank you so much for coming in. Always a pleasure to chat, very much so in person. This is not my day job. If your company needs to develop a thought leadership position or leverage social media, particularly LinkedIn, drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.